You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you have a scary story that you would like to submit, email it to me. A shout out to my channel members and my patrons. Also, just a fun fact for yesterday. I actually drove an hour down southeast to a nice touristic area to pick up some amazing merchandise for my superfans. That's right. Three lucky individuals will be receiving a surprise boxed package very shortly. Now, let's get spooky. I lived out in Gresham, Oregon for a couple of years. It's a rain-drenched, lush area of a state, located in close proximity to Portland. I was fresh out of high school and eager to seek out new adventures. My friends and I are what you would call rednecks. Mind you, not the type that enjoy watching NASCAR on the lawn sofa, but more the type that love the outdoors. Whether it be fishing, hunting, camping, trail riding, shooting, blowing stuff up, off-roading, or just having a bonfire, we loved it all and spent the majority of our time doing it. We frequented many beautiful locations around that area, including Mount Hood, Mount Bachelor, Goat Mountain, Larch Mountain, Lolo Pass, Thousand Acres, among countless others. But undoubtedly, my favorite place was Wildcat Mountain. Back then, Wildcat was the best. It is an older, rather secluded logging mountain located just outside of Sandy, Oregon. Anyone who is familiar with the area will likely have heard of it. There are a few scattered residents there, but they are few and far between. The mountain itself was pretty rough and mostly old dirt roads and crumbling stretches of broken pavement. A lifted 4x4 truck or jeep is definitely recommended for those attempting to traverse it. The mountain once played host to countless parties and massive bonfires with hundreds of people in attendance. I can't even count the amount of drunken times I have been a part of it up there. The remote location of the mountain allowed for loud gatherings to occur while being mostly unheard by locals. Cops also seldom patrolled this area, simply because it is so large and difficult to traverse. This, of course, made it the perfect party spot. Unfortunately, the mountain was recently closed off some time back. A massive old tree had fallen directly on the road that leads to the main trails. Dang thing had got to be at least 15 feet around and weighed a couple of tons. Most people said that this was in response to a 20-year-old girl getting alcohol poisoning up there and not being able to reach the hospital in time. It's tragic, really, but I never did find a conclusive answer. Whatever the reason, the mountain now remains mostly inaccessible to the public, unless you got a vehicle that is capable of climbing over the monstrous tree. Recently, I was reminiscing about all the good times I've had up there over the years, all the forgotten memories with good friends. However, one night in particular stood out to me. It was towards the end of the Wildcat Mountain days, and it still unnerves me to this day. The day started out much like any other. It was a Friday, and I was looking forward to getting off of work and enjoying the weekend. It was early springtime and unseasonably warm for that time of year. After texting some of my friends, we decided to head up to Wildcat and have a bonfire after we were off work. I finished out the remainder of my day and texted my friends Eric and Chris. We decided to meet up and gather supplies for the night. Chris worked for a shipping company who always kept a large supply of pallets on hand. Eric and I met him at work and loaded up several broken pallets into Eric's truck until it was full of capacity. We then headed out to collect our guns and some ammo before departing. I texted Andrea, another friend of mine, and asked her if she wanted to go too. She agreed and told me that she was going to bring Brittany and Megan along too. We met up with the girls an hour or so later and proceeded to head out. Eric drove his Chevy Silverado, and Chris and Megan went with him. Andrea and Brittany rode with me in my Jeep Wrangler. We arrived in Sandy a little after 6 that night. We stopped by a gas station and liquor store to purchase our essentials for the night, and after refueling, we were back on the road. By the time that we had arrived on the foot roads of Wildcat Mountain, Andrea and Brittany had already began drinking their fruit-flavored vodka, and I could tell they were already getting a little tipsy. I rolled down the window to feel the cooling mountain breeze as we rode deeper into the mountain. Partway up, Brittany began begging me to stop the car so she could pee. I gave her a hard time about not going when we were just at the gas station, but eventually, I agreed to stop after she threatened to let loose in my back seat. I pulled the Jeep over, and Brittany and Andrea hopped out and headed into the woods to the right. Eric pulled his truck up behind me, and Megan also hopped out to join the other two girls. I pulled the handbrake before stepping out into the brisk evening. I decided I may as well go too, as we still had a little farther to go before we reached our destination. I began to relieve myself in front of my Jeep while looking around at the forest around me. Lucky for us, most of the snow had melted already, but trace amounts could still be seen in the ditches along either side of the road. I took a deep breath of the chilling damp mountain air and felt my soul revitalize. The air of nature had always just seemed so calming to me, and it is a most welcome departure from the polluted state air of the city. Below us, the pavement laid cracking and obviously quite neglected, even more so than the last time that we had been there. The forest stood still, with the occasional sounds of bird calls breaching the rumbling sounds of my engine. I scanned the memorizing scene until something on the edge of the road caught my eye. In a tree about 30 yards in front of me on the left-hand side of the road, there was something dangling from a tree about 20 feet up. It looked like a rucksack or something. Hunters and campers often string their food up from trees to try to prevent attracting bears, but this one was right at the edge of the road. It would have been a terrible place to camp, let alone to hunt. My headlights just barely illuminated the bottom of it, but it was too difficult to make out what the object actually was. Luckily for me, I kept a large spotlight with me that I could plug it into the outlet in my Jeep. Thing comes in handy if you ever drop your phone out there and have no battery. I plugged it in and shined the beam upwards towards the object. At first, I couldn't comprehend what I was seeing, but soon was stunned to discover that it wasn't a sack up there, but an entire deer hanging about 20 feet above the ground. Its head hung lifeless, and a massive hole was ripped in its stomach, from which entrails, gut, organs dangled out of. Blood and various fluids had soaked the dirt and snow below the tree. The antlers, which I first thought to be tree branches, were broken and gnarled, an obvious sign of struggle. I looked around for an anchor line, but there was no visible ropes or ties securing it from anywhere, at least that I could tell. It was just haphazardly sprawled out onto a massive tree branch, like someone had launched it out of a catapult and lodged it into a tree. My immediate thought suspected that this was the handiwork of a cougar, but the size of the deer made it unlikely. It was a buck, and I'm no expert in deer adolescent rates, but I'd say it was pretty close to fully grown. I know that leopards and other big cats will sometimes drag their prey into trees, but could a mountain lion really do a full-grown deer? They don't get nearly as big as leopards, and the leopard's prey of choice, the gazelle, is much smaller than a deer. I called out to the other members of the group to come take a look. We all stood around and gawed at the scene for a few minutes. None of us had ever seen anything quite like it, and the grisly sight made me feel an uneasy sense of dread. I voiced my theory of the mountain lion to the others. However, Chris quickly shot it down with the same argument I had used previously. I thought perhaps it was a cruel joke or prank of some sort, albeit messed up one at that. Serious banter was quickly replaced by jokes about serial killers, and the momentary dread began to subside. For a moment, a strange fleeting thought of retreat crossed my mind, but I wasn't about to let something as meager as a mutilated deer carcass stop me from enjoying my Friday night. We all piled back into the rigs and proceeded further up the mountain, continuing onward as the concrete road gave way to that of a crude gravel one. Several minutes later, we arrived at the infamous fork in the road. The road straight ahead led to miles upon miles of more trails. The path to the right was the way we normally proceeded, but there was quite a substantial amount of snow on that path. After discussing our options for a few minutes, we decided to proceed to the right and attempt the snow to reach our normal spot. Eric pulled his truck around me and rumbled on to the right and into the snowy path, despite our initial hesitance. He hadn't got more than 100 yards in when he began to run into trouble. His truck was suddenly stopped by a large snow drift on the road. He went into reverse and crept backwards a few feet. He pulled it back in drive and attempted to roll forward, but with little success. He repeated the pattern several times before his back end began to sink in downwards. With one last effort, he gunned it forward. Snow and slush flung out sporadically as his truck roared in an attempt to free itself. His truck shook back and forth, but soon the tires spun freely in the deep snow. He was stuck. Brittany, Andrea, and I found this rather amusing as we looked on to Eric struggling to free himself. Eventually, he stopped moving altogether and waved his hand out the window, signaling his distress. I flipped my Jeep around and began to back up towards him. The idea was to use my two pairs of chains to link our rigs, rear bumper to bumper on the hooks while I pulled straight out, dragging him backwards down the trail. We performed similar maneuvers countless times before, sometimes with four or five rigs hooked up all at once. Unfortunately, upon inspection of the chains, I quickly realized that they were too short to stretch from the dry gravel to the spot in which Eric was stranded. Because of this, I would have to reverse up the trail onto the snow patch in order to get close enough to him. Chris hopped out to guide me backwards, and cautiously, I backed the Jeep up into the snow. We linked up and I began to slowly pull away. The chain pulled tight, and Eric's truck began to shimmy slightly. I only managed to pull him a few feet before I too lost traction. I put my Jeep in reverse and again backed up towards him, this time with the intent of getting a running start for more momentum. By the way, don't ever try this with chains. If either of the chains would have snapped, they could have easily cleaved one of our heads straight off our body. Regardless, I gunned it, and it jerked Eric's truck a bit, but still was not enough to free it completely. The chain was pulled tight, and I began to spin my wheels. Back in reverse I went, and then forward again. My engine screamed, and my RPMs jumped to dangerous levels, but I succeeded in doing was spinning the tires and sinking deeper. His truck was just too heavy, and I didn't have enough room for momentum anymore. We both exited our vehicles to once again inspect the situation. My Jeep was now dug deep into the snow to the point where the fenders were now hovering only an inch or two above the top layer. Eric's truck had been moved maybe 5 feet, but that wasn't even the worst of it. The chain was pulled tight, so tight that we were unable to disconnect it. We were both stuck, now without any ability to leave. Not the first time that this has happened to us, however, so we decided to just chill for a bit and try to think of a different plan. We broke out the pallets and lighter fluid and sparked up a fire in a patch on the side of the road. The drinks came out, and all the troubles of life began to slowly slip away, including the current predicament we found ourselves in. We all laughed and reminisced for a while about all the good times we had together. Eventually, after we were all several beers deep, we decided we possessed the cognitive and physical capabilities required to free our trucks. Everyone was quite drunk by that point, except for Eric, who seldomly, if ever, actually drank. Eric, Chris, and I returned to the trucks, and once again I tried to pull him out. Again, we had little luck moving anywhere, so we busted out the shovels and began digging away at the snow and ice. An hour or so of struggling, digging, and drinking passed, and little progress had been made. The chain was still pulled too tight to disconnect, and we were running out of options. We began to realize that we may not be going anywhere for a long while. It's not as though this idea frightened us, at least initially. As I said, we had been stranded before, but it was a bit of inconvenience. When given the choice of sleeping in my own bed, or in the driver's seat of my Jeep in the middle of the freezing woods, well, that's not a very hard decision to make. We decided our best course of action would be to call our friend Alex and ask for help. By this point, it was already around midnight, and we knew Alex would likely be sleeping and definitely less than excited to hear from us so late. Unfortunately, we didn't have much of a choice, unless we wanted to spend the night out there. Eric strolled around our makeshift camp, attempting to get a signal on his phone. Eventually, he was successful and got a hold of Alex. Alex was not exactly thrilled about driving all the way up there to help, but he agreed nonetheless. He had a hand winch, which we could use to hopefully pry ourselves free from our little situation. The downside was that Alex drove a BMW 323i, and there was simply no way he would make it up to where our trucks were located. That meant that we would have to make the journey back down the mountain on foot to the point where Alex could meet us. A good 2 or 3 mile trek at least. Before we had the chance to thoroughly discuss the plan, Chris rose up in a drunken stupor and began stumbling back down the road towards the bottom. I guess he felt inspired at the time because the next thing we knew, we had disappeared into the darkness. I decided I had to follow, so I prepared myself to give chase to Chris. I grabbed my Taurus 44 Magnum from my Jeep and gave chase several minutes later. Better to be safe than sorry after all. Eric and the girls elected to stay behind and watch the camp, and so I headed out into the darkness alone. I began walking down the mountain. The environment away from the fire had gotten very cold, but luckily the alcohol dulled my senses to some capacity. I called out to Chris several times on my way, but he didn't answer back. It surprised me how quickly he had gotten out of earshot from me, but in hindsight, I hadn't left until several minutes after him. That, or he was just too drunk to call back. Chris is a guy with an iron will, and once he sets his mind to something, you'd be hard-pressed to stop him. And when he's drunk, that will increase at least tenfold. I was walking down the mountain in complete silence for quite some time. By that point, it was probably at least 1 or 2 a.m., and the forest around me had fallen uncomfortably silent. It's strange. I was so used to the place being so loud and full of people and noises, but tonight, I was completely alone in the dark. The normal environmental sounds were non-existent, and the only sound I heard was those of my footsteps meeting the torn-up pavement and snow. Not even a single gust of wind managed to penetrate the dense canopy of the woods. It was so quiet, I could almost hear the sounds of my own heartbeat. Being alone in the dark forest at night is not a fun sensation. Obviously, there are no lamps outside or artificial lights up there, but luckily for me, it was a full moon that night, which illuminated the immediate vicinity enough to travel without need of a flashlight. I could only see as far as the tree line, however, and on either side of the road stood an enclave of monolithic trees in high attention like soldiers given a command, Seeing past them from the road was near impossible. I called out to Chris several more times on regular intervals, but he never did answer me back. So I soon gave up altogether. I'll be honest, it did make me quite anxious to not get a response. I continued walking down the mountain for quite a while, past the small dirt pit and down towards the fork in the road. Still, there was not a single sound to be heard from any direction. No chirping of crickets or calls or owls, nor a distant howl of a coyote. Just silence. It's strange what happens when the human mind goes through extended bouts of silence. You never realize just how much you rely on sound for comfort. Only in complete silence do you realize how much you miss the white noise ambience. Suddenly, a disruption shot out through the dark woods. The sound of a nearby snapping twig halted me in my tracks. I froze and glanced in the direction in which I thought the sound had originated from, hand ready to draw my .44 from its holster. My heart began to pound in my chest as I stared into the darkness of the forest. In that moment, my senses seemed to heighten. I felt every chilling breeze and heard the drip drop of water from the leaves. I saw nothing despite my heightened awareness. I questioned myself on whether I had heard the noise at all. I know that the mind can play tricks when it's in an uncomfortable situation, and I wondered if I had simply fallen for it. Slowly, I began to press onward, while still keeping a close eye on the tree line. I hadn't even gone 100 feet when I heard something that made my stomach sink like an anvil. The slight pitter-patter of footsteps and snow coming slowly from the woods. 4 of them in total, with another snapping twig at the end. I stared, unblinking, in the direction of the noise as the sound halted abruptly. Whatever it was seemed to be aware of the noise it made and stopped, not to draw any attention. My heart felt as though it was in my throat, as immediately the sensation of being hunted arose in my mind. I still couldn't see anything in the darkened woods, but I know now I was being followed by someone or something. One of the things they teach in hunter safety is the fact that the only things clumsy enough to snap twigs in the woods are the bears and humans. Obviously, a bear would not be a welcome sight in any situation, and if it was a human that was stalking me, then the implications of that cannot be good. I picked up the pace and continued briskly walking, now just trying to get down as fast as possible and cursing the initial idea of leaving the bonfire in the first place. The thought then crossed my mind that maybe it was Chris trying to spook me. He honestly had never struck me as a prankster type, but I guess under the right circumstances, he may go for it. Although he likely knew I was armed, and I doubted he would risk a tragic accident for a quick laugh, it just didn't make any sense, and my mind raced as I thought to figure out what it was that was following me. Not long after, the footsteps began to reemerge. That dreadful pitter-patter of crunching snow lodged my heart in my throat. I decided to just keep walking and see what my pursuer would do. The footsteps continued and began to slowly increase in frequency, and so did my heart rate. I began rapidly glancing back over my shoulder, desperately trying to get a glimpse of my stalker. The footsteps seemed to grow closer and closer, but still, I saw nothing. Deciding I couldn't take it anymore, I stopped and drew my revolver. I called out for Chris again, warning him that I was armed and not to mess with me. As I expected, though, there was no response. The footsteps had stopped again, leaving me alone in the silence once more. My nerves had gotten the better of me in that moment. I raised my revolver and fired a warning shot into blank by the tree line away from the direction of the footsteps. The serene night was piercing by the deafening concussion of the bullet. My ears were accosted by the blast, making it difficult to hear any response from my pursuer. I waited for a couple of seconds and heard nothing in response, except for the ringing in my ears. After hearing nothing for quite a while, I decided to continue my descent. Not a minute later, the footsteps returned, but this time at a much more rapid pace. The steps drew even nearer, now seemingly only a couple of meters away. I began the run now on the brink of absolute terror. Whatever was on my trail was now quite obviously hostile. I heard the crunching of the violent snapping of twigs coming from behind me. I turned back to see trees and branches snapping wildly as a large dark figure moved rapidly through the woods. Whatever it was bipedal and massive. The thing had to be at least 10 feet tall. I thought it to be a bear, but knew the chances of a bear walking that quickly on two legs was slim to none. As I glanced back, my foot fell upon a patch of ice, causing me to slide and eventually come crashing down to the frozen ground below. Immediately, I whipped my head back up, aiming my quivering hand with revolver towards the woods. My heart thundered wildly in my chest, but the beast, whatever it was, had stopped. No more movement came from the woods. Quickly, I regained my footing, staring intently into the woods. My pursuer had ceased all movement, and again the environment had fallen silent, save for my labored breaths. I stood and stared towards the woods, desperately trying to identify what or who that was after me. By this point, of course, the notion of a human follower was simply out of the question. It seemed like I stood there nonetheless for hours, but in reality, the adrenaline surge was probably just messing my perception of time. I aimed a shaking arm and revolver towards the woods, debating whether or not to fire another warning shot. Suddenly, a noise chilled me to my very core. A low, guttural growl blared like a crash of thunder from within the woods. The noise was so loud it seemed to shake the very trees around me. It sounded almost like a howler monkey, but at a much lower octave and much more threatening. The roar made me tremble, and in my heightened frenzy, I forgot any notion of standing my ground and took off in a mad sprint down the road. I was forced to stop after several minutes of desperate running, unable to continue as my lungs threatened to implode. Dang cigarettes. The entire time I hadn't so much as glanced behind me. I scanned in all directions, panting heavily from the late night workout. Again, I saw and heard nothing. For several minutes I waited, listening intently while trying to replenish my exhausted lungs. I had almost fooled myself into believing I had gotten away, until a commotion drew my attention yet again. The crashing and snapping of twigs again began from somewhere back in the woods. I could not see, but definitely could hear the beast in a mad dash towards my position. I raised my revolver again, knowing that my only chance now was to stand my ground and fight. My knees shook wildly below me, threatening to give out at any moment. The wreckage grew closer and closer, until its wake of destruction was in view. The hulking beast tore through the grove like tissue paper, flinging branches, snow, and everything else out of its way like nothing. It reached the edge of the woods and suddenly stopped about 20 yards away. It was then that I got my first and only true look at the creature. My previous estimate of 10 feet was probably a little overzealous, but it did stand at least 7.5 or 8 feet tall. Thick knotted black hair covered its entire muscular frame from head to toe. Its eyes were deep pools of black, or a dark brown which seemed to drink in all the light from the moon above. Its face and jawline were large, but hard to discern in the shadows. The beast stood motionless and almost silent, with the only noise being that of its slow, deep breaths. I have never felt terror so strong as I did in that moment. Animals are good at sensing fear, and despite my horror, I did my best to remain steadfast and unwavering. The beast and I shared a deadlocked gaze with one another, both of us seeming to size the other one up. I clutched my .44 tightly, set dead to rights directly at the creature, and ready to unleash hell at a moment's notice. Every fiber of my being was screaming out for me to shoot the thing, but if it would have charged at me, I would have. But it didn't. Instead, it let out another guttural howl, but this time, it was significantly lower in volume and tone. I find this part hard to convey, but to me, the screech did not seem like the one of a threat, but instead a plea. If the creature truly did intend to hunt me, then why would it reveal itself to me like that? Why stop and simply stare from the side of the road, when it could have easily charged me down during my panic-stretched dash and ripped me apart? I felt my arm slowly lower the revolver to my side almost subconsciously. The beast let out a grunt and cocked its head from the shadows. We stared at each other again, a strange moment of evelation between us. The beast broke the stare and took a step forward. The move caught me off guard, and as if on instinct, I again raised the revolver in its direction. The creature then did something I would have never expected. It froze. As soon as my revolver fell upon it, it ceased all movement. It's as if the beast knew what the firearm was, and the danger it represented. Could an animal possibly understand the significance of such an item? I don't know the answer, but in my case, I chose not to fire. The beast seemed somehow less hostile than I initially thought, and I got the sense if it truly wanted me dead, then I could do little to stop it anyways. Suddenly, the creature lifted its head and made that low guttural noise again, this time seeming as if it was surprised by something. I stared in abstract confusion as it lifted its massive right arm and extended its index finger in a curl but definitive pointing motion. Out of my peripherals, I saw light beginning to increase behind me, but dared not to look for fear of the thing. The increasing light allowed me to view the creature's face in detail for the first time. It had dark brown, almost blackish eyes, large ridges on its forehead, and distinctive facial shapes of a primate. The beast then slowly lowered its arm and grunted again before suddenly turning and charging back up into the woods from which it came. The tree branches splintered and exploded as the beast rushed back into the thick blanket of the forest. Just as suddenly as it had appeared, it was gone, and the eerie silence returned. I found myself at a loss after that. I could still sense eyes watching me, concealed in the darkness of the forest, but somehow I knew the beast would not return. I turned into the direction it had pointed, and saw headlights in the distance racing towards me. I holstered my pistol and the car drove up beside me moments later. It was Chris and Alex, with a lashing wince we needed to hopefully escape. They greeted me as if nothing was wrong, but soon seemed to sense the shocked look on my face. I was clearly shaken up from my encounter, and they could see it. They pried me for answers, but I didn't say much. I couldn't tell them. I would have seemed insane. I was severely hesitant to go back up to the mountain, but I knew we had no choice. Alex drove his car as far as he could take us, but once we hit the dirt, we knew it would take us no further. We grabbed the winch and reluctantly headed back up on foot. It took us a good hour to reach the area again, and the entire way I felt severely paranoid. I sensed that we were being watched the entire time. A few times I thought I heard the footsteps again and saw shadows in the trees, though the beast never reappeared. Much to my relief, we eventually reached the bonfire again. It was probably 3 a.m. by that point, and the fire had long since extinguished and only smoldering coals remained. Eric and the girls were all passed out of the truck. We woke him up with some struggle, and we finally were able to free up his truck and get out of there. Now I know what most of you are probably thinking. It was Bigfoot! And I'll admit, it sure did feel that way. I've never really believed in such superstition, and just never understood how a primate that large could go unobserved and unconfirmed for so long. Needless to say, I am a believer now. I think those things are a lot smarter than we give them credit for. From its apparent recognition of my gun, to the way it gestured at the approaching distant headlights of Alex, maybe it's not so outrageous to think it possesses some advanced cognitive abilities, maybe even close to that of a human's. It would surely require some intelligence above that of a normal primate to be able to elude capture or even video recording for so long. An animal of that size has to have no natural predators, at least not in these woods. And thus, the only true threat it would face would be that poses by the most dangerous animals of them all. Humans. I've always wondered to myself, and perhaps you've wondered as well. Thousands, if not millions of people claim to have seen these creatures or interacted with them at some capacity. Why has no one ever shot one? The mere notion of bringing down such a beast for promise of fame and notoriety has to get every hunter's blood pumping. Not to mention the inherent lucrative incentive which comes stapled to it. Well, I could tell you now, as someone who came face to face with this supposed Bigfoot and had such an opportunity, I never would have felt right taking it. When I looked at the creature, I saw not a demon or a monster. I saw an animal, a primate just trying to survive. It could have hunted me down and torn me from limb to limb with ease. Hell, it could have killed all of us that night. It had every advantage on me, save for the gun, and didn't take it. It chose to instead confront me and scare me off. I don't know if it had anything to do with that deer in the tree, but maybe that was a warning it had constructed. Perhaps it had a family nearby that it was defending, as primates do normally live in small groups. Who knows? Perhaps it knew that killing me would have meant others would come looking for it. I don't pretend to know exactly why it did what it did, but one thing's for sure. Had I pulled that trigger, I never would have felt right about it. Sure, I could have and probably would have received fame and notoriety from the media, but that's just not me. I have no doubt that there are other hunters out there who would not think twice about shooting it, but I don't want that to be on my conscience. As soon as that cat was out of the bag, others would hunt the rest of them down nonetheless, driving by the promise of greed and fame. It's how humanity has always been. Someone finds something of value, and the cockroaches swarm to ravage and cannibalize it, until nothing remains. Killing that one creature would have doomed the entire species. I've never gone back to Wildcat after that night. It just didn't feel right anymore. Plus, it's blocked off and nearly impossible to access except by foot. More importantly though, I came to recognize that the mountain is its territory, and it doesn't want intruders, and I don't want to try its patience. For those of you who would doubt my account, well then, Wildcat Mountain awaits you. Feel free to prove me wrong, and take a midnight stroll up there any time you desire and report back. I would not encourage anyone to go up there, but if you are truly adamant, then I can't stop you. I myself don't plan on ever going back. Lately, there's been one thing that has been on my mind though. Maybe the massive parties and tragic death of that one girl weren't the only reasons that Wildcat Mountain was blocked off by the cops. And maybe it wasn't even blocked off by the cops at all.